10. All missiles enabled.
Minus 30.
Get me wing command post on your direct
line. That's not the correct procedure, Captain.
Try SAC headquarters on the HF.
That's not the correct procedure.
Screw the procedure. I want somebody on the goddamn phone before I kill 20 million people.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory. My name is Eric, and this is episode number 20 of our film cast that we just started this year as we approach the tail end of the year, dive bombing right through the holidays, and coming at you live in your ear holes on Twitch and other fantastic media of your selection, primarily depending on whatever you play it back on if you listen to us sometime later. So I want to go ahead and get things started for today's show. Very excited about this one. Let me go ahead and introduce the panel. I got Rich with me today. How you doing, sir?
Yo-ho, I'm here.
I got Vanessa.
Hello, hello.
Jason.
Yay, hello.
And the kid.
Hello.
You guys say such clever things. I appreciate you. I really, really do.
Usually I say hola.
Today, that's true. Usually you say it in another language. So today we're going all the way back to 1980. And we are doing
1983.
Show of hands, how many people were alive? I just want to get that out of the way.
Is this good radio?
It's fantastic radio. Nobody needs to know.
I was barely alive. I was.
Oh, there's quite a few of our audience that were alive. That's
I was
cool.
Just a hair over three.
I mean, hi guys.
Yeah, we appreciate all of you, and you're going to appreciate so much what we have to say today, because we're going to take you back to a beloved cult classic that may or may not hold up to its cult classicness under scrutiny. That's what we're here to discuss today. Welcome to Exposition Street. Thank you for joining us for the 15 minutes that you did. We understand if you go now. We're going to talk about War Games. This movie came out June 3rd of 1983. It was released at number 3 at the box office with $6.2 million that weekend. Number 2, by the way, was Psycho 2, beat it out, with $8.3 million. And it had the misfortune of being released a week after Return of the Jedi, which was still in theaters, and took $17.2 million in its second weekend. So, give you
there
some context.
There was a Psycho 2?
That was
exactly my reaction.
That was my thought.
Oh my gosh. I wanted to look it up too to see exactly what we were missing, you know. But how much we noticed this, right? With cult movies, particularly when you really start looking at the box office, almost all of them did poorly upon
initial
release.
And they got
beat
by stuff we don't remember. So they get the last laugh, at least.
This was definitely a movie that was big on it, I don't know, it was 83. Did we really have video stores? It was definitely big on cable. It was definitely, you know, I saw this a lot on TV. I'm sure I rented it a time or two, too, when I was a kid. But, I mean, I that could have been years later. That's what
it was an HBO darling for a while, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my gosh. I remember I watched the heck out of this movie.
So many times.
I'm starting to wonder if the fact that I watched a whole bunch of it when I was that age really distorted my view of the movie. We'll get to that.
Right.
Rated PG, a runtime of 1 hour and 54 minutes, which upon watching it again, seems like an inordinately long time to sit through some of the stuff in this film. Not that it was bad, just wow, that sequence went on a whole lot longer than I thought it did.
Oh, Eric taking my job today?
Can anybody say, let's have a scene where we want desperately to get off the island, so let's run from the chopper for 20 minutes?
I did say that.
Talking about the helicopter scene.
I forgot there was a helicopter. That.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there's so much stuff in this movie that I forgot.
On the other hand, it was one of the few scenes I remembered clearly because it took so long before it was a big, intense scene.
Well, and I realize we got a lot.
Son of a bitch turned us in.
Let's dive in a little bit. Okay, a young man finds a back door into a military central computer in which reality is confused with game playing. That is my favorite description of this movie ever, I think. Possibly starting World War III, which, yeah, there's the funny thing, too, is this takes us all the way back to the Cold War era, where that was a thing. I mean, where we were constantly in fear of that. It was part of regular everyday life, right? And this is towards the end of the Cold War. It had been going on that way for 20 years.
Yeah, Cold War or no Cold War, though, there are people in rooms, I'm sure, with buttons and satellites and tracers. And if somebody started to launch stuff, they'd go.
Okay, I have a unique perspective on that.
Do you really?
My father had that job.
Oh, he was the dude in the room?
He was the dude in the room.
Dude.
Huh.
Which dude he was he? Was he was
one
the dude
of the
that
dudes
was,
in the room?
Was he the dude that was, with the gun, or was he the dude
with the key
said,
that wouldn't
well,
make yeah, the call?
Well,
the phone.
They all technically, have keys. They both have keys, well, and they both have guns, because yes, it is a matter of treason if you defy the presidential order to fire the weapons.
Yes.
I wonder,
and apparently 22% of them did that.
I wonder how, yeah, I wonder how heavy that was, the idea, you know?
Apparently it was. It was a thing because having heard my mom talk about it after that, because this movie came out after my father was not doing that job anymore, my mom said, yeah, he had to take his loaded weapon to work with him every day.
Well,
see, I had so many questions, though, because, I mean, yes, I get, you know, you threaten the guy at gunpoint, turn the key. But if he doesn't turn the key and you shoot him, what has that done you? That does you no good. You still can't turn both keys.
Yeah, but the incentive is if you know you're going to get shot if it's not done, then the you're going to do your duty because you knew the only other option was death. If it meant that much to you not to die, yes, the missile didn't go off. Congratulations, your treasonous ass got what you wanted.
Summarily executed, literally on the spot.
By somebody who obviously had the right to do that.
Well, by someone who had the right.
They had the responsibility to do that.
Absolutely.
That was orders.
Responsibility to absolutely. Shoot someone.
Which is why they had to do it in pairs.
Yeah.
At the moment that they...
So, here's my question. Why did he live?
So, that's one of the plot points. Because we start out with this wonderful Cold World cold open. And you've got this
I didn't remember at all, by the way.
I didn't either. Okay. I completely forgot the house in the woods.
If
part.
You know you have to shoot someone who doesn't turn the key and you have live ammo on you at all times and you don't know this is a test, people are going to get killed.
22%
it's a
of
plot
them,
hole.
Apparently.
It's a Ooh, plot hole.
Wait, the guy at the desk gave the dude the gun.
Mm-hmm.
The guy at the desk knew
it was
a test.
I was just about to say.
He could have given him blanks.
Holy crap, dude. That's good.
Because they did not get
that
the guns until
the
after they checked in.
They checked in. They gave them guns. Mm-hmm.
So unlike your dad, who took his loaded weapon to work each day, apparently that wasn't the way they decided to work it in the movie. Fair enough.
That makes sense.
Because it was
why
test
they did
day.
That.
And see, I had questions about that too, because... This entire procedure, everything that goes on in there is supposed to be classified. So how did the movie makers know what was supposed to be going on to put it in the movie in the first place?
Well, there's advisors and military things, and I'm sure some of the things are completely totally wrong.
Some of
wrong.
It's probably not real, and most of my idea of what my dad did was actually influenced by this movie and not the other way around.
Right. Well, here's a kind of a fun thought experiment. How many of our listeners do you think who haven't seen this movie in about 35 years don't know what the hell we're talking about right now?
Considering the fact that I wouldn't
didn't
have remembered
this
any
opening.
Of this.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had any idea.
And I only did because it has a connection to my history.
Ooh, yeah.
I've been in a missile silo. I've seen the missile. I've seen the command center. I did not see that room. That room's a little more protected.
Well...
I've seen an empty missile silo.
Let's see. Directed by John Badham. John Badham. Mostly does TV now. We don't see a lot of him. He did Blue Thunder shortly before this, Short Circuit after this, Point of No Return. I mean, he's got some credits that we know.
War Games and Short Circuit were the same guy.
Same director.
That explains so
doesn't
much.
It? Doesn't it? Written by
Johnny Five.
Here's some more. Written by Lawrence Lasker, who wrote Project X, which also starred Matthew Broderick. Remember that one? Came out a few years later.
The monkey one.
He and Walter F. Parks.
Chimp
who
one.
Also,
chimp. They're chimps. Sorry, Alicia. Sorry.
Sorry. Backhand
so sorry.
You through this Zoom call. And she's not even here. Lawrence Lasker and Walter F. Parks, who also was his co-writer on this, wrote Sneakers together.
Oh, that was a good one too.
So many things I've
which,
never seen.
Richard and I have talked about it because he really wants to do that one at some point. And they
when
also
it becomes available.
Parks produced a ton of other movies too. Music by Arthur B. Rubinstein, who did lots of what? I mean, he's okay. Music's fine.
This movie had music?
Actually. It had quite a bit of it. It was just all kind of generic.
Oh, yes, it did. And actually, I was going to talk about that for a brief second.
Sure. Go ahead. Good time.
Because turn your key, sir. Turn your key, sir. Dense. Horrible. Dense. Turn your key. I'm going to shoot you. Sweat. Dripping. Bullets. Everything. Crazy. Dense. And then we get a military polka.
Yep. It sounded like Police Academy suddenly. It's great.
Way to break the tension.
Isn't there a name for that?
It's yes. Like, what just happened?
I just call him Richard, but he tends to break tensions in our roleplay games. So
Richard's more like, what's that word for the comedy that is it isn't necessarily about good timing. It's about
bad timing.
It's about destroying drama with
you were the one who was talking to me about that the other
day. Yeah, God, I know the word. It's at the tip of my brain and it's not coming to me.
Anyway,
I'll think of it in the middle of something
not
else.
Not relevant to this, but that, yeah.
The music was there, and
big distraction break.
It did things to adjust, and there were several times where they completely altered the feel of what you were watching by completely 180ing the music in the background.
It did control the atmosphere with the soundtrack. It was definitely done well.
I appreciated it.
It was not strongly notable, but it was well done.
Yeah, it wasn't notable in and of itself. It was just more
somewhat it shouldn't be
chaptery. Think, okay, now we're here. Okay.
See, Matthew Broderick was our lead, played David Lightman. Love the name.
21-year-old playing a 17-year-old. Hello, Hollywood.
And this was his first big role, right? First leading role. A couple years after this, I mean, this was everybody already, if you were a child of the 80s at all, you saw him everywhere because he had a major movie come out every 2 years. In 85, he did Lady Hawk, 86, Ferris Bueller, 87, Project X, 89, he was in Glory. I mean, he was all over the place. And that was just the beginning. And the dude kept it up until around about Inspector Gadget. Go figure.
That's the only one you mentioned that I've seen.
Oh.
You're funny.
I'm not alone.
Fired.
He's not serious. Dabney Coleman as McKittrick. Tootsie was in 82. Cloak and Dagger in 84. So he's right in that area. Of course, Coleman has done a ton of films. And I'm trying to remember. I was trying to remember where I first kind of saw him and thought, God, I really don't like that guy. And I'm pretty sure it was in 9 to 5.
Ooh, I was going to say, I know exactly where it wasn't was that I went, oh, I hate that guy. It's 9 to 5.
And
I've only seen two other movies with him in it, and it's 9 to 5 and the Beverly Hillbillies movie they did.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny.
And he's that guy in everything.
And yeah. He's in The Man with One Red Shoe, which...
Never seen him.
Is what it is. And John Wood played Professor Falcon. Also in Lady Hawk, by the way. Do you guys remember that?
That's where I know him from.
Also in Lady Hawk.
I knew him. I just couldn't put my finger on where I knew him, and I wasn't going to pull out IMDb for it.
Which even played an even less socially in touch guy than he did in this.
Okay, what that's I recognized that guy from was Little Vampire, which was done in 2000.
Oh, that's funny. God, did he look the same? I'm just curious.
He was playing a Scot, later. So there was a bit more facial
hair. It's kind of a timeless quality of the guy, I think.
Eyes are what remembered.
To quote the chicky girl in the movie, he looks interesting.
Jumpin' Jack Flash in 1986, he was in that too. And Miss Ally Sheedy, running out of the main cast. And this was early for her too, because this was the, not the same year. Breakfast Club came out in 85. St. Elmo's Fire came out in 85. St. Elmo's Fire came out in 85. And then Short Circuit was in 86 when she got disassembled.
Disassemble Stephanie.
Yeah, that's one.
That was her.
That was mostly it.
Yes, Jason, you should open IMDb.
I
didn't even think I recognized her. I didn't for a moment go, who is she?
Oh, come on, Ally Sheedy, really?
Didn't put two and two together.
She's Brat Packer. St. Elmo's Fire, The Breakfast Club. I mean, I knew her from John Hughes. In fact, I forgot she was in this because her part is important, but that role could have been played by anybody.
If you said the name Ally Sheedy, I would have gone, oh, yes, she was one of those kids in the 80s in the movies with the other kids in the 80s.
Yeah.
I would have recognized the name. I did not recognize her.
Surely you've seen The Breakfast Club.
I've seen it, but I like it. And I've seen Short Circuit, but I didn't go.
I'm not talking to you, Vanessa. Yeah, to be fair, actually, I don't think I knew her name as an actress until Short Circuit.
I've seen Short Circuit, but it's been 20 years.
Her role was so important in that, it was so much more vibrant. So, and that had the Goot in it.
That's the one person that I actually remember out of the movie.
Yeah, that's the only other person, so that's fair.
Well, no, the other person is his partner, who really shouldn't have been who he was.
Oh, gosh, I forgot he was in that.
Uh-huh.
What's that guy's name?
Exactly.
Oh, my God. He was so good in it, too.
Oh, he was great, but it was bad.
Oh my gosh.
He was in Hackers.
He played the Plague.
He played the Plague, yeah. And gosh, he should not have played an Indian guy at all.
I don't want to look it up right now. I don't want to open another window to look it up right now. But yeah, that's the guy. Only other actors that really kind of jumped out at me, because I was going through the list and I was like, who else is worth talking about? Because invariably we will. And Barry Corbett is probably worth mentioning at least. He played General Behringer. This was a guy.
I love him.
You saw in all kinds of stuff for so many years. I mean, he has 222 acting credits to his name. According to the trivia, he ab-libbed most of his lines for this movie, by the way.
I can see that.
Yeah. All very, and he had some great lines.
Oh, yeah.
I captured a couple of them. He had some great lines. And he was actually, even though he was the guy in charge, usually the douche in charge is the guy that you are routing against. And he was the guy that you were kind of like, would everybody just shut up and listen to this dude? At least part of the time.
Right.
And then Eddie Dezine appeared in this, and I always have to mention him when he comes up, because there was few people who were more irritating to me at that point in my life. He played Malvin, one of the two computer hackers that he went to see early in the film.
Oh, he was so frustrating.
He's that guy, that one who talks like this. He was in Grease.
He was so cool.
He was in 1941. He was in Midnight Madness. He's done lots of voice. He was Mandark in Dexter's Lab.
That doesn't surprise me, Eddie.
Yeah, he's done so much voice work. Look at Jason. He's losing his shit.
He is a trope.
Now I picture thought it.
Mandark was imitating that guy.
He was totally the trope.
It was that guy.
I thought that was a voice actor that said, you know what? I got to come up with the most annoying voice for this character possible. Oh, I'll imitate him.
Eddie Dezine. And the great thing is
still nowhere near as irritating as Gilbert Godfrey.
No, but he's in that same territory. And Gilbert's... Definitely.
It's a different kind of annoying.
Gilbert's a different animal. Gilbert is a naturally funny dude.
Yes.
He's annoying, but funny.
I've watched hour and a half long specials of nothing but Gilbert Godfrey because he is awesome.
Can't do it. It's like
I love chalk him on a, so much.
Nails on a chalkboard. I cannot stand his voice.
But it's that voice. It's that voice thing, yeah.
I can't think of the woman whose voice has that effect on me. But
Fran Drescher?
Like the nanny?
Yes, that is her. Yes.
We all know exactly where you were
afraid,
going.
I was always afraid that those two would one day have children together and the world would have cause to fear.
Interesting thought. Great subplot. Actually, ironically, I knew when I first heard Mandark in Dexter's Lab, because the first time I heard it, I went, oh, that's that dude. And I had to go look it up.
And it was, in fact, that dude.
Years ago.
What's his name?
It was, in fact,
that Eddie Dezine.
I'm going to have to look him up.
Yeah.
I loved him in this.
He was in Grease 2 as well. He was like one of the only two characters that was in both movies, I think.
Right.
The principal was too, and a couple of the teachers maybe. See, box office. We had a $12 million budget, made $6.2 its opening weekend, so made half its money back opening weekend, and grossed $79 million worldwide, well, U.S. worldwide, same thing back then. And that's everything I've got. That's War Games in a ship in a bottle formula there. Whatever you guys want to talk about at this point, because, man.
We only talked about him for a brief second, but I loved Barry Corbin in Northern Exposure.
Oh, good call. Dude!
As Maurice.
Yes. I loved Northern Exposure, though. That show There's was a small so part of me
when I was young watching Northern Exposure live. I know that technically Maurice was a NASA guy and this was a NORAD guy, but there was a small part of me because they retired Falcon.
Right.
And they killed him and put him on an island in the middle of nowhere. The
same thing.
And I'm like, that's the dude from War Games. I had a headcanon that Maurice was General. What's his bucket?
Corbin. General Behringer. Yeah.
General Behringer. My headcanon was that Maurice
shipped him off to Alaska.
They retired him and put him in Alaska where he could watch Russia from his house.
So a lot of this movie takes place in NORAD, NORAD Command Center.
Yes.
Which, interestingly enough, I liked this bit of trivia, was built for the movie. It cost about $1 million to make the set, which at the time was a huge part of that, what I say, $12 million budget right there. It was the most expensive set ever constructed at the time. And the producers were not allowed into the actual NORAD Command Center, so they had to imagine what it would look like. By the way, the truth turns out it was a lot more boring than what they came up with for this movie.
Oh, yeah. But this still defines what I think a command center should look like.
It set the gold standard. We've seen so many films where they modeled their idea of, like, Forward Command or NORAD from this set.
Actually, I was watching this, and as soon as we got to that set, I was like, oh, it's SG-1.
Yeah.
That's a little different. Cheyenne Mountain.
So that maybe answers one of my questions is, do they really do public tours of frickin' NORAD?
Obviously not.
And if they had that type of setup there, they wouldn't do tours there.
Yeah, it's one thing to do a tour. It's another thing to walk into the room with the keys.
Now, I've seen on the internet actual pictures from inside of the base after some research after watching Jeremiah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously things change, and they no longer use it as for the command center that they did back in the 80s.
In the 80s, when they would not have let them in. The Whopper.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We need to talk about the Whopper. Actually, that was going to be my opening bit originally, but we were so harried getting started. I was gonna be like introducing the panel. I was gonna say, you show it. How's I gonna phrase it? It's really funny. It's like, you know, you show him World War III, or you want World War III, Rich will show you with a Whopper. You know, it's like something like that.
I've got one in my basement now.
Yeah, yeah, good call.
It's a lot smaller now. It actually, my Raspberry Pi outperforms it. But
I was going to say, you realize that our phones are more powerful than that.
Oh yeah, Whopper.
Oh yeah. But I'm still jealous in this film because of all the tech that Matthew Broderick's character had. The only thing that I only got to see and touch once in real life was an acoustic coupler modem. Because by the time I was into modems, we were doing 300 baud and we had direct plug-in things. I never got to actually utilize an acoustic coupler modem where you put the handset in.
Now, keep in mind, Kid has a personal stake here, because when I first met the Kid, he was actually painting the little glowy buttons that they put on those machines.
They used
to light up.
They used actual, what was it? It wasn't radon. It was,
I don't know. I don't remember. It's how you lost your hair. I remember that the first time.
It's radioactive. It's not uranium. I don't remember. I think my memory is going.
It's radium. Why. It was radium.
It was
they
radium.
They used to use radium in the paint.
Yeah,
it was radium. And the ones that are still alive are the ones that didn't keep licking their brush to get a fine point on it.
Which I never did. I would lick my fingers and then use my fingers.
This is a true thing.
That's so much better.
And yes, it is.
There were so many that developed mouth cancer because to get the fine points so they could draw the watch dial things, they would lick the paint.
Naturally. I've been trying for years, but when I paint minis, apparently it just isn't irradiated enough. I'm telling you.
No, you need paint. A Geiger counter.
Are you sure?
Not entirely. My tongue did stop working in 87.
Never do that again.
The movie. You're the only ones who could see me.
And here we are.
The movie includes the first cinematic reference to a firewall. I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh,
that is kind of cool.
Which is, of course, used in network and internet security today. The Whopper machine was built of, like, you know, wood and had, like, stuff plating over it to make it. And had, like, a guy inside it.
It was made to look pretty.
To make things happen.
You wouldn't have that many register lights on the outside of the machine.
No.
You just wouldn't.
No, there was no point to that.
No, because we don't need a visual scan of what all the bits in the main CPU are doing. We don't need it. That's not
I love the
weird.
Woman circling it, taking notes as she looked at the little flashy lights.
I was like, what is she doing?
It's like you could memorizing really decipher the flashy lights.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you stare at long enough, it's like the Matrix. You can actually get into the mind of the computer.
I have issues with that, too.
And since we're talking about it.
Yeah. No.
Who came up with this? This was amazeballs. It sounds so sinister.
Right. It is supposed to sound like power. Yeah, and it was there. But yeah, no, there was a lot of what informed my understanding of internet security and things you need to do and things you shouldn't do and how important it is to pay attention to internet security and not write back doors.
Right.
As I was growing up and getting into computers.
Isn't that actually, didn't President Reagan see this movie and have a fit and they actually did adjust
did somebody find some
security based on
it? I would love to see some trivia on that. That is amazing.
I've heard that. I don't know if it's reliable, but I know I have seen on more than one occasion that President Reagan watched War Games and said, we need to fix this now. And people started taking computer security a little more seriously.
Well, remember the Star Wars defense system, stuff like that, the whole kind of,
good Lord.
You know, the advent of making technology that could respond so quickly and precisely as to avert a first strike. Yeah, it all feels like it's connected to movies like this somehow, you know, because it obviously was imagining. These writers are imagining a thing that isn't too far out of bounds. And the tech in the show looks convincing, compelling. And I'm sure that as far as like the tech that Lightman was using, it was all pretty period, you know, accurate for the time. Right. I mean, the way things looked and felt his bedroom and the way he handled connecting to things.
I don't believe they actually had speech synthesizers.
I did in 80s. In 84, I had a speech modulator box that I could plug into. I got all the parts from Radio Shack and you put it together and I plugged it into my Atari 800XL.
But it was a year after this, right?
What I was actually going to say is
I was inspired to actually look for it.
That we're capable of using intonation and pronouncing words correctly.
Because you had to program it. There were two ways of doing it. You could either have it try to hard do it, or you can have it soft do it where it would know words and it would know how to pronounce each word individually from a dictionary.
I now have a clip where Rich compares hard doing it and soft doing it. I'm keeping that forever. I have to admit that I'm not sure that they could build computers that could actually pronounce things correctly until about 1999, 2002, 2003.
It wasn't until
the German U-boat commander that used to read the emergency alert system weather alerts couldn't say anything right. I'm just saying. I know. I was there.
But no, it was a thing. Today, modern speech synthesis still does a thing where they do a hybrid where if it doesn't know the word, it'll try to do a good phonetic pronunciation based on tables. But it's got a whole list of words that it does know the exact phonemes to use in the correct breakage to make it sound more natural. Unfortunately, we change the way we do those words depending on where they're at sentences, and it can only be programmed so deep.
Which is why it often sounds like they're saying something, their sentence breaks in the middle because they say a word like we say it at the end, not at the beginning.
Yeah.
And GPSs have gotten really good, I've noticed.
They're getting better.
It's interesting because we live in Kansas, so we have a lot of Native American nomenclature everywhere.
Right. So
a lot of those words it does not know. But it surprised me the other day when we had a GPS start actually pronouncing a couple of them correctly that I know it had mispronounced. Prior to that,
they teach them.
Somebody's submitting that stuff to someone.
Yeah. And they put it in the dictionary and it reads through and sees it and it should know if it's doing it at the end of the sentence or at the middle, and it does it in the right way.
Still calls Kichai catchy. So
my Siri has a British accent, so she gets all sorts of stuff wrong and it just makes me chuckle, and that's why I have her British.
Right.
So the writer's main inspiration for the character of Professor Stephen Falcon was Cambridge Professor Stephen Hawking. No surprise there. He was originally approached to appear in the movie, according to the trivia, but declined because he didn't want the producers explaining his disability. And I don't remember I feel bad because I didn't watch any of the Hawking biopics or anything that came out a couple, 3 years ago. But I don't remember where he was in the development of that disability publicly.
Yeah, that's why I was just wondering myself at this point.
Early 80s,
whether he was already in a wheelchair, whether he could talk, you know, I mean, I don't remember how fast any of that stuff happened. So, but that is a really cool bit of trivia, and probably very true. You know, he was definitely that guy. And in deference to what you were just talking about, Jason, the movie inspired Congress to create the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of 1984. Representative Dan Glickman, Democrat from right here in Kansas, opened the proceedings by saying, quote, "We are going to show about 4 minutes from the movie War Games, which outlines the problem fairly clearly." According to White House committee report, War Games showed a realistic representation of the automatic dialing and access capabilities of the personal computer, which I thought was kind of
early robocalls. It blind called everybody in the phone area.
That's crazy, isn't it? Hello, hello, click, hello, click. Looking for a handshake.
That's what robots do now.
And here's another thing that talks about how connected everybody was in the world.
Yeah.
Because he called every single phone number in 4 different prefixes and got a list of 8 computer tones.
Well, it never finished. He interrupted it before it was done.
Well, yeah, who knows how many.
I didn't think he did interrupt it. I thought he was pulling from a completed list.
No, because he said to the girl, she asked how long it was going to take, and he was like, well, let's see what we've got so far, and pulled up that list.
Okay.
Yeah, because he'd been compiling that list based on hits that the computer picked up as hits.
Right, but it was still, there was this prefix, 9,999. There was this prefix, 9,999. There was this prefix, 9,999. He had like 7 or 8 numbers.
Yeah.
Total.
Yeah, which means he called that many wrong numbers.
At least 30,000 wrong numbers.
And a lot of those were had people answer.
So just think about how many people have access to the internet today and such.
Yeah, yeah, technology's
phone numbers
changed a smidge, hasn't it?
Just a little bit.
If the writers of the time could have imagined what it would look like today.
Right. They wouldn't have used a 9-inch floppy disk.
Oh my God.
That was awesome.
I have worked with those.
I've only ever used one of those once.
Me too.
Was that actually bowling alley?
That was where I was too.
Oh, because they had him in my high school. I was in business class.
Those bowling machines, their comp systems, they were old.
Yeah, they were from the 70s.
Yeah, they developed way back when, and they still did their job because they weren't nothing complicated was required of them.
No need for updates.
It's so patches. Funny. That's funny. It wasn't the same bowling alley, was it?
No. At least I don't think so. No, it couldn't have been because
it's not where you were painting the little red. Anyway, shall we do some clips? Do we want to talk about the?
Sure,
we could do that. By the way, Galaga. So much Galaga. I was excited.
Galaga, yeah. Boy, they really played that up here.
I really played it up back then.
What, Jay? You get that what? Look.
His score was too high the second time they showed it.
Oh, no! What a thing.
There's no way he had 50,000 points by level 3.
No, that's true. That's not possible.
Maybe he hacked the machine.
I did just see in the trivia that the studio sent Galaxian and Galaga arcade machines to Matthew Broderick's house 2 months before they started filming so he could practice.
Practice it. That makes sense.
And he still missed one of the red bugs in the challenging stage.
I caught that too. I was like, oh, right? He just screwed up. Not getting a perfect score. You don't get that score bonus unless you get all of them.
Interesting, interesting bit of... something about this movie. I don't know if you can call it trivia, but because Ready Player 2 by Ernest Cline just came out, there's been a lot of talk about Ready Player 1 lately. And I actually got around to reading the book. I'd seen the movie when it came out. I got around to reading the book just last month for Ready Player 1. And I just finished the second movie. Richard bought it for me a couple weeks ago and I powered through it.
Book, yeah.
But the one of the things that they did in the book, as opposed to stuff you see in the movie, which this would have been hard to do and obviously wouldn't have made sense anyway. But one of the challenges that the main character, Wade, runs into in the Easter egg hunt in the book is a thing that they end up calling Flick Sinks, which is this invention of a challenge, a game in which you are virtually placed inside the role of a character in a movie, which then unfolds around you. And your job is to deliver the lines and make the moves as inconsistent with the movie. And the closer you got scored. And then when you messed up, you lost points, stuff like that. And this was one of the challenges that came up on him rather suddenly. He got he grabbed one of the keys and it immediately took him into this, you know, the reality fades away and he finds himself inside an arcade playing Galaga. And he's Lightman's character in War Games. And so in a way, I had just relived that scene in excruciating detail through that chapter in Ready Player One. And I say excruciating, a little tongue-in-cheek, because Ready Player One, by the way, was a fantastic book. It was a really fun read. The way the guy writes is very compelling. Notice I only talked about the first book. So the scene... if anybody cares about my review, write to me. I'll talk to you about it. Ready Player Two was actually a fine book. Not as good as its predecessor, in my opinion, but I do have strong opinions when it comes to books, unlike movies or games. 5 stars. So,
Oh,
come on. You got to give it its due. This movie has a lot to say about my childhood and what I got out of it at the time. And I watched it so many times, which I would not have done with a movie I didn't love. It is not a perfect movie by any stretch, but I love the hell out of it.
Yes, but I thought based on the cold open that you maybe adjusted.
Maybe 4.5, maybe 4. I got to think about it. We're not there yet.
Okay.
There is a lot of nostalgia in this space.
And that's hard. And actually that makes it worse in some ways because there are some things that the movie did that I get to that point, and based on the inference I made, I kind of have to sit through stuff to get to the nostalgia again. It's like, I don't remember this taking this long. And it's worse when you're actually trying to catch clips for a show, because then you're paying a lot to how things sound, a lot of attention to how things sound.
Yeah.
And that changes the movie a bit.
See, I didn't have that experience. Mm. I was enjoying the plot, and then the nostalgia pieces came up, and I'm like, okay, if you watch this and you weren't alive in the 80s, would this still seem like an interesting movie to me? And I kind of
let's
feel
ask
it was,
Vanessa.
But
sorry,
she wasn't alive.
I'm sure we'll get there.
We'll get there. But yeah, no, I didn't see it as plotting as much.
Did you like it, Vanessa?
Yeah.
You know, okay.
Yeah, it was overall a good movie. I thought it was paced really well for what it was. It was longer than most of the movies that I've seen from that era, but I thought it did really good pacing for the story. It was explaining
a lot of new concepts, like computers talking to computers and things that normal people don't know.
I think I would actually have criticized the pacing as one of the things that bothered me about it. But I think, and again, that's largely possibly in context or in contrast rather to my own memories more than anything.
Fair enough.
To my expectations of the show.
I didn't remember it being
I'm not coming into it cold.
That reminds me. Can we talk about the Mandela effect?
Sure.
The whole build up to watching the movie after we decided we were going to do it, I couldn't remember hardly anything about the movie except the basic premise. And my memory centered around one line that I recalled, which it turns out is not in the movie at all.
Which one?
I remembered the computer asking the kid if he would like to play a nice game of global thermonuclear war, which never happens. The computer asks him if he wants to play chess, and he insists on playing global thermonuclear war. So There's never a scene where the computer asks that question.
I could figure this out for you.
But I could hear it in my head.
I figured this out for you, kid. I know exactly how this happened, because I know you. Somewhere along the line, you thought it'd be funnier to phrase it the other way. Somewhere along the line, you're talking to somebody, and they make some comment in Joshua's voice, and you say, would you like to play a nice game of global thermonuclear war? And from that point on, that's the way it went in your brain.
That is probably exactly how it happened.
And there's such a thing. Radiation memes do that too. Parodies would create memes that would click that into your head and you would just convert it to the computer's voice.
Yeah, meme culture is
memes were a little harder in the 80s because we didn't have the internet.
And the word means something completely different now than its original intended meaning.
Well, now they just think memes means pictures, but it's actually supposed to be a genetic form of an idea.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Trusting the diodes.
So what you're telling me is that all this trillion-dollar hardware is really at the mercy of those men with the little brass keys.
That's exactly right. Whose only problem is if they're human beings. But in, 30 days, we could replace them with electronic relays. Get the man out of the loop.
Gentlemen, I wouldn't trust this overgrown pile of microchips any further than I could throw it. And I don't know if you want to trust the safety of our country to some silicone diode.
The way he phrased that, I loved it.
Silicone diode.
Knowing that he ad-libbed most of his lines just makes his role that much more charming to me.
Yeah.
So, and his Texas kind of accent there, you know, just kind of.
I liked the drawl in that line particularly.
And that was part of the setup, kind of the part of the stakes, like that they're laying out of the movie. And when this movie was released, I mean, I was young enough, I wouldn't have really gotten it. That particular piece of subtext would have been just a little over my head. The fact that what the movie is really about is whether automating systems and removing the human element from them is dangerous. Because we were on the, I mean, later on we explored this with, you know, Skynet.
I was going to say Ultron, but.
Yeah, the Matrix. I mean, later on we explored this in what AI is steadily growing towards, you know, the singularity.
Yeah, this is one of the first AI bad movies.
Yeah, really, it is. I mean, and it's not even really framing it that way. It's just framing it in as if we put the decision-making qualities principally into the hands of a computer and remove our ability to interfere, is it going to come back and, you know, blow up in our face?
And now people literally teach AI engines how to do things on their home computers. We have AI engines in our cell phones telling us what word we're going to type next.
And sometimes they're right. You know, the thing with you mentioned the thing with the two keys earlier, which is a trope in a lot of movies when it comes to like military security, you know, nuclear this or, you know, the in the subs, you know, all these things where you see this. Is this a real thing or is this a movie trope? Do we know?
It's a real thing.
Yeah, okay. It's a thing.
And now you had mentioned something about there being the two keys because they have the two guys, you know, they have to be able to trust everybody to do the job. And I'm sitting here thinking, I always figured that the thing about like two keys was so that one guy couldn't break in and launch the nukes.
That's half. The half is one guy can't break it and launch it. And the other half is two guys are there. So each guy is under threat of the other guy having to complete their treason orders if the other guy doesn't do their job.
That seems so.
No one person makes that decision. You make it as a team.
And it's also kind of, it probably has a little bit of link back to the old firing squad days when there was only one active bullet. Nobody, it's not one person's
responsible for everything.
Putting all of that weight on the 20 million.
That's interesting.
I definitely followed orders. It is 100% followed
orders. It's not just me we did this thing, we share this burden together.
If they're going to do that, if that was the principle of the point, you would think they'd just make it so that either key did the job, not both.
But again, but then if you got either the first key half, did the job,
someone can come in and just launch it.
Yeah.
Somebody, or one guy can go, you know, if something weird happens and the guy just gets snaps, you don't want a guy to be able to just to turn the key of his own accord with no order, with no anything, right, and go, hey, I'm going to launch the missile today. The other guy's there to stop him from being crazy and just launching the missile by himself.
It's time to end the world. Goodbye, Detroit.
Oh, snap.
You think that with technology the way it is now, and there's probably a lot of fail-safes in most, you know, technology that's capable of doing dramatic and powerful things. But, I mean, you see that sort of thing played up in movies all the time. It's the one guy who's the drone pilot who decides to do his own thing, you know, or has his own agenda or is paid off, you know, or it just can be anything, right? I mean, people have positions of responsibility all the time. Technology is just a way of removing responsibility at that point and, you know, allowing us to blame the computer, I guess. They only follow programming, right?
But if you give the computer both keys.
Dialing in.
What are you doing?
Dialing into the school's computer. They change the password every couple of weeks, but I know where they write it down.
See, that's one of those things that I think was intended to kind of place the ability work of this character squarely into the auspices of the demographic for the movie. You know, they want the kids that are watching this to relate. Oh, if I knew how to hack into the school's computer, I could change my grades too.
My the school my mom taught at, that their whole district had a token ring server that they used for their grades, and which is a crazy setup to begin with, but their password did not change. And I knew it. That's I'm also funny. Too honest, but I knew it, and it was ridiculously simple.
Was it pencil?
I'm not giving it to you because I don't know that the school district isn't still using it.
That would be Hutchinson schools, right? You know, it's just out of curiosity. Simple password.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
If you're listening, simple password. And it's pencil.
It's pencil. You got me.
Only if you're under 18.
They answer with a tone that other computers can recognize.
Here. You calling every number in Sunnyvale? Is that expensive?
There's ways around that.
You can go to jail for that.
Only if you're over 18.
So much there.
Just wondering how he got around the phone bill for that many long distance calls.
It's called phone freaking.
Phone freaking, yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask about that. I couldn't for the life of me for a while remember what exactly the term was. And I didn't want to look it up. I was like, I'm going to remember this. And finally what it was, I was still on this where I'd forgotten to give up and look it up. And then about 15 minutes ago, you mentioned hackers. And one of the main characters is called the freak. And that's why was the freaking. And so I was like, oh yeah, that's it. That's what it is.
Oh.
And then he does it later in the movie with the payphone.
Oh yeah. The rotary dial payphone.
Like, look at that going, what is this thing? In so many ways. And then the only if you're over 18. It's like, which was kind of like a buzz phrase for everybody at that time period. You know, it's like, You everybody always thought you can't really get into trouble unless you're an adult.
Yeah.
People still think that, I promise. This
movie came out, my parents ran a boys' home full of people who were under 18 and in trouble. So, and those were the good kids who were under 18 in trouble, the ones that they could actually get out of jail.
Wow. Speaking of which, here's I got to prepare myself for this. Okay. Bracing myself. Our back doors.
You'll never get in there.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure. I bet you Jim could get in.
Yeah, I bet you couldn't.
I bet you he could.
Well, you'll never get in through the frontline security, but you might look for a back door.
I can't believe it, Jim. That girl standing over there listening and you're talking about our back doors?
Mr. Potato Head, back doors are not secrets.
Yeah, but Jim, you're giving away all our best tricks.
They're not tricks.
What's a back door?
So glad you asked.
Good stuff. But I, yeah, when I realized that, because I'd forgotten that Eddie Dazeem was in this, I'd forgotten that scene existed at all. You know, one of the many little throwaway scenes in the middle of this movie somewhere.
Mr. Potato Head.
David's supposed to be so savvy.
Uh-huh.
And he's the one that delivered that line. If they'd let Ally Sheedy come just a little bit closer so she could go, what's a back door? That would have made sense. And maybe even had David go, oh yeah, that's this thing. I should have looked for that.
It's because there was a difference between people who worked with hardware and people who worked with software. David's a hardware guy. He doesn't necessarily, we don't see anything in the movie that suggests that he codes or writes. And that's where the back door comes from, is the programmer.
His parents bought him the equipment, but he was learning the skills from other people on the streets.
Interesting. Yeah. Until you said that, kid, I hadn't thought about that either. And that's still, there's still a big difference today.
Yeah.
Hardware people, software people. You know, because I'm not sure all of us know both, you know, and that's the very different skill set. Interesting.
That was just my read on it, but it made sense to me.
Let's see. I called this one How We Get Skynet.
He designed them so that they could play checkers or poker, chess.
What's so great about that? Everybody's doing that now.
Oh, no. What he did was great. He designed his computer so that it could learn from its own mistakes, so they'd be better the next time they played. The system actually learned how to learn. It could teach itself.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly enough, that was only very slightly possible with the technology that existed at the time, simply because of the amount of computer processing power it takes until the creation of neural networks, which could do it at a fraction of the amount of processing in space that was necessary before then.
I don't know what you just said at all.
So do I.
I do.
I'm going to go back to playing my clips.
I was mostly talking to Rich.
In fact, this one is for you guys.
Here, look. This is obituary.
Wasn't very old.
Well, he was pretty old. He was 41.
Oh, yeah?
No!
Oh, that's old.
There you go!
Okay.
And is it someone in this room actually 41?
In 1 week. Exactly.
Oh, that's old.
Oh, we could have timed this one way better, huh? 1 week better.
Next week. Next Sunday, I turn 41.
Happy birthday early.
Put this out on his birthday.
Awesome.
but I turned 41 next Sunday. That was one of my tweets this time.
I was going to say, so I'm by the time 51, I post it, so
by the time I post it, you'll be 41.
By the time you post this, I will be 41. Unless
officially over the
really
hill, my friend.
Happens.
As far as the nostalgia trip went, that line hurt.
Oh,
I agreed with it in the 80s.
It's like the last time I watched this, that line didn't hurt.
No.
I was having this conversation a while back because, you know, everybody, I think, ages differently and sees their own life through different eyes, of course. But time seems to pass so much quicker as you get older. And I love the conversation about that. I think it's fascinating.
I figured that out.
Yeah.
I know what's going on with that.
Mm. It's aliens, isn't it?
No, it's a simple perspective.
Yes.
When you're five, you only have 5 years to compare the length of a year to. So it's 1/6 of your life.
Yeah, that's the conversation I was actually alluding to.
I've talked about that too. The big, the smaller the pieces of pie are, the faster you go through them.
Yes, it's so cool.
When you're five, you've had five pieces of pie. A year is 20% of your life. When you're 41, a year is only 3% of your life.
Think about that in the context
something.
Of
that's bad math, but.
At of characters that. Who are effectively immortal and live for thousands of years.
Oh God,
because
another birthday?
That's pertinent. What is
already? I just had one last.
I don't remember
here.
What day I was born. Are you kidding me?
I don't remember what decade I was born.
Some of us barely remember that in our 40s. I don't think that's fair anyway.
Yeah, imagine hundreds or thousands of years later.
Gotta look it up. What century
entire,
was that again?
Entire decades going by like months or weeks.
No. Newspapers were still a thing. It had to have been the 20th century.
Newspapers are still a thing now.
Relative to that, because I don't think we want to come off as pretentious jerks. But
what? Have you listened to our podcast?
Speak for yourself.
I forgot my original point. Yeah.
Sorry. I was gonna say, what is this thing that will make us not pretentious jerks?
Yeah. I forgot entirely.
This has got to be impressive.
It was all going to be leading up to the fact that I have a lot of memories. So my dad died in 08, and he was only like 52 at the time. I have a lot of memories of him about when I think back to things that I remember him for and time I remember spending with him and stuff.
I realize that it all comes from a pretty narrow period for the most part. Not necessarily in terms of that's what I remember, but that is how I remember him best. And it wasn't the later years when I was an adult. We didn't spend that much time together. And at some point I realized that those years I'm talking about, I am now older than. That's when it hit me. Wow. The years I best remember my father were mostly in his 30s, it turns out, when I was in my teens. So, 41, consequentially? Yeah, freaking old.
Fair enough.
Global thermonuclear war.
Shall we play a game?
Oh.
I think I missed him.
Yeah, weird, isn't it? Yeah. Love to. How about global thermonuclear war?
Wouldn't you prefer a good game of chess?
Later. Let's play. Global thermonuclear war.
Fine.
That's a sign of resignation.
The one game on the list that obviously looks like it was added after the list was first created.
And that's, of course, a deference to your Mandela there.
Yes, kid. Yes.
Yeah. It's how about a nice game of chess? That's it. And I think that you're right, though. I mean, even though you had it backwards, that's, I think, the most famous line for the movie right there.
Although, didn't that one not have nice in it? That was a good game of chess? Because it tripped me up when I first watched it. I was like, wait a second. I thought he said, how about a nice game of chess? And it didn't. That's at the end.
They talk about the game list again at the end.
At the end, after it learns, it says, how about a nice game of chess?
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
This one says good.
Behringer being the boss.
What the hell's he yelling about? Stop, I didn't order any simulation.
We're not being attacked. It's a simulation.
Whoa, now, hold it. You're not supposed to be running in here. Somebody could get hurt.
I'm sorry, sir. We don't know how it happened, but someone on the outside fed an attack simulation into the Matrix simulation.
Conley, take us off full alert. Hold at DEFCON 4 till we find out exactly what in the hell's happening here.
And that's another one of those, the fact that he ad-libbed lines. You're not supposed to be running in here. Somebody could get hurt. I couldn't imagine them writing the lifeguard line.
Yeah.
Of all the things running. To say, you shouldn't be running.
And you got to wonder. Okay, so the only bit of trivia I had, and I love this about movies, right, was, how did it phrase it? Oh, that he ad-libbed most of his lines. So we don't know what most of his lines is, but obviously he's got plenty of lines in the film that had to be delivered for plot. So that's fine. So is it because the actor cannot or does not bother memorizing lines, or is it because the directors respect that he's really good at ad-libbing them, or is it because they do extra takes and they like those better, or is it because he is encouraged to say things the way they hit him in the moment? You know,
nobody hired Robin Williams right? to read from the script.
And I mean, he's not Robin Williams, but it's that principle, right?
But he's that guy. But
it's that
guy.
Person. It's that quality of an actor.
But Barry Corbin is that guy in a lot of the roles that he plays. And I can totally see them going, you know, I could even see, and I don't know this for a fact, but I could see them writing the script and go, you know, General Behringer, Barry Corbin
says a thing. Yep.
Such and such. Says something Baron Corbin is.
Something about running in the command room. Who knows? Probably not. You're probably right. I love the idea that he probably ad-libbed that completely off the top of his head.
It's like, you yell at this guy for no good reason.
I entitled this one because NORAD. That's why. I'm not sure where it is.
Colonel Conley, would you mind relinquishing your command, sir? Miss Daly, would you come forward and sit in this rather important chair? These buttons you see here and switches are connected with the Strategic Air Command, missile launching stations, etc., and other things that are classified. Ms. Neal, would you press this button right here, please? The red one.
The one in the middle?
Yes, ma'am, the one in the middle. Oh, my God, that's the wrong one, Ms. Neal. That's a joke. You didn't blow up anything.
Wow.
They're totally going to do a public display like that in the middle of an active war simulation that they're completely convinced is real.
It addresses that core question to the whole, you know, even if we didn't know because of what the producers went through, that nobody got to just kind of trot around NORAD and check the place out. Would they really give tours like this? That's just insane.
Yeah,
it was a fun point in the story. It was a nice break.
If they didn't, they wouldn't have been able to explain.
It was a mechanism for that. And that's important because the producers knew that NORAD didn't give tours when they made this movie.
In fact, it may have been
right
a specific kind of jab at them.
Yeah.
That's true.
Right.
Well, let
right,
us come right. look and see what your building looks like. We'll show Plus, you.
Everybody loves a Red Alert Claxton.
If we were in charge, we'd let the city people of Sunnydale come in.
I would have labeled that clip Trollers Got a Troll.
Then there was like this 15-minute period in the middle of the movie when I couldn't capture anything for audio because there was no actual dialogue. And everything was sound effects as Lightman made his way out of NORAD. It wasn't an action sequence per se. There was no shooting and blowing. This is usually when I expect to have this problem in movies. It was, it was just, lifting up a vent, crawling down a ladder, all right, with, kind of moderately successful musical accompaniment.
Yeah, the Foley operators did really good for that sequence.
Definitely. Foley work was on point.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know how I felt about it at the time. And it really highlighted to me because I was listening for it. It was like, boy, there was a long section of this movie. We're watching it, and they could have. It occurred to me later. It's like, now that I know that these guys did sneakers, that made all the more sense. It occurred to me later as I'm watching right. this, they could have condensed that whole section down into 2 minutes.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been any fun in that.
They could have condensed a whole lot of this movie into 2 minutes.
But I like the pace 2 minutes, and the action.
There were lots of places where it could have been.
And there was a lot of weirdly unnecessary scenes in this movie. I mean, not that they didn't serve a purpose, but that they could have conveyed the same information in a quicker, more efficient way. Sometimes with characters that didn't appear anywhere else.
Did anybody...
I feel like I need to point out the scene right. where Lightman and Hot Chick are attacked by a pteranodon.
For example...
It gave a good right. introduction mechanism.
That was freaking awesome.
Establishing the quirkiness of the Falcon.
But did anybody else notice a possible product placement that something you could not do nowadays?
It wasn't the clapper, was it? I missed it. What was it?
No, the general had he constantly had Redman.
Oh, yeah,
too.
He kept pulling it. Yeah, I saw that.
In his hand.
Oh, at least they're not smoking in the facility.
I'm like, no. Well, you couldn't smoke in that facility. That's why you had to chew.
The medical room smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, yeah.
There was an ashtray there.
But
they could smoke in the building. They were smoking in that building.
Yeah. But probably not on the computer.
But you see that a lot in older shows too. I mean, all the stuff for like that's supposed to be like in NASA, like at Houston, and they're sitting there putting cigarettes out.
But it'd been so long since I'd seen anything like that. I literally had to look up to make sure if that was the actual tobacco product or the bubble gum.
What was the bubble gum?
Oh, it was tobacco. I looked it up.
And one of my brain things is, A, he doesn't have a cup. B, he's going to pull a giant wad of chew right before he picks up the phone to call the president.
Ew. That wasn't your
that accent.
It was something else. You had one in your twit.
Oh, that wasn't my ooh moment. Yeah, there is a major ooh moment right about here. Dabney Coleman goes to meet people, and there's highfalutin people, and he takes out his gum and hands
and
it to his secretary.
Oh God, yes, and she puts it in her mouth,
and she puts it in her mouth and chews it and walks away, and I just
apparently completely missed that.
That was done to make you notice it. It was done to me. Wow, and Vanessa didn't notice it.
Such and such and such and such isn't here to see you, sir. And he takes a folder from her, takes the gum out of his mouth, and hands it to her. And she looks at it for a second, puts it in her mouth, and goes... Oh.
I'm kind of glad I missed that.
I wish I'd missed that. I did not need to see that. Ew.
Speaking of Falcon, gate instructions.
Well, high school students, you're on my land and I didn't invite you.
Stephen Falcon?
Now, listen carefully. Path. Follow path. Gate. Open gate, through gate, close gate. Last ferry, 6:30, so run, run, run.
Run, run, run. Spoken like a programmer.
That was the instructions.
Very open to high school students.
Open gate, close gate.
Let's see.
Open gate, through gate, close gate.
Thank God. Reel to reel.
That middle one is very important.
Oh. I haven't had a reel to reel film projector since the 80s.
Okay, if you've had a reel to reel projector, perhaps you can answer a question for me.
Okay.
I understand why he, standing between the reel-to-reel projector and the screen, had light shining on his face and the show going... Why did they?
The lighting guy.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
You'd have to ask the director of photography for me, sir. Okay. But I'm pretty sure it's the lighting guy.
That was a movie prop thing. Okay.
Well, also, the screen's very reflective. And so they would be lit up by the screen being shined upon.
But they weren't completely lit up. They
had projection against their skin, just like Falcon did.
Just like he did.
Oh, maybe he has an Omnimax projector.
It's 1983. Okay. Just a thing.
Yeah.
Lessons in lessons in futility.
Except that I never could get Joshua to learn the most important lesson.
What's that?
Futility. That there's a time when you should just give up.
What kind of a lesson is that?
Did you ever play tic-tac-toe?
Yeah, of course.
But you don't anymore.
No. Why? Because it's a boring game. It's always a tie.
Exactly. There's no way to win. The game itself is pointless.
That, of course, nods towards the heavy-handed ethical issue that is addressed in the movie that I did get as a kid. This idea that something along the lines of nuclear war was a no-win scenario, you know, and pushing that social statement through the through the auspices of the movie. Not just that being on the edge of war was dangerous and that it, you needed to keep control of that, but that there were no winners, which was actually still a pretty frightening thought at 8 years old. So,
although something that I've taken from it with this viewing, that was my original takeaway too, as a kid, was war bad, you lose. Everybody loses. But this time, one of the things that I got from it was the whole balance of power manipulations. You know, the fact that, you know, when he was like, do they know that if you fired, or if you could destroy them entirely? And they go, yeah. Then why would they fire everything at you and force you to do a retaliatory strike? In other words, because we have all of our missiles and they have all of their missiles, neither of us can use our missiles. Because if either of us use our missiles, both of us use our missiles and everybody dies.
That was the entire point behind the nuclear proliferation.
If only we had missiles, why not blow them up? If only they had missiles, why wouldn't they blow us up? It only comes to a draw like that if both sides can kill everyone.
MAD principle.
What's that? I have that on here somewhere. Let me find it here a second. Oh, first there's this. Nature takes its course.
Now, children, come on over here. I'm going to tell you a bedtime story. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Once upon a time, there lived a magnificent race of animals. Dominated the world through age after age. They ran, and they swam, and they fought, and they flew. Until suddenly, quite recently, they disappeared. Nature just gave up and started again.
That reel-to-reel thing. I was looking for that. I knew I had it here somewhere.
Quite recently, in fact. I love that it was quite recently, in fact.
A point that I'm also sure wouldn't have really sunk in when I was a kid. Like, oh, we're talking about the cosmic scale of things.
In geological terms, yes, it was quite recent.
Here's your MAD principle for you. Mutually assured delusion.
General, are you prepared to destroy the enemy?
You betcha.
Do you think they know that?
I believe we've made that clear enough.
Then don't. Tell the president to ride out the attack.
Sir, they need a decision.
General, do you really believe that the enemy would attack without provocation, using so many missiles, bombers, and subs, so that we would have no choice but to totally annihilate them?
1 minute and 30 seconds to impact.
I wanted to talk about her. Because you know she got hired for that delivery. Mm-hmm. That was really good. And in that scene, she just comes in every 15 seconds or whatever with an update.
Like 10 seconds, wasn't it?
Something, yeah. It's actually longer in dialogue between that, you know. So it's like every 30 seconds of dialogue, she comes in with a 15-second update.
Well, we give monologues during 6-second rounds in a role-play game, so.
Oh, I wouldn't say there's anything wrong with it. I was just making an observation. That's dramatic reality, my friends. What's your beef is about? Nobody could find the beef back then anyway.
Let's see.
That's true. We had little old women looking for the beef.
I only got a couple. Wendy's. I only got a couple left. I had to. I just had to. Invading the deep logic.
Games. Try it,
John. Let's feed it a tapeworm.
That's too risky. It might smash the system.
How'd the kid get in through the back door?
We took it out.
Can we invade the deep logic?
You keep hitting a damn firewall.
Wants to play a game? Then play it. Have it list games.
Stephen, for Christ's sake.
No, let him. He's played it before.
He can hardly do worse than you have, John.
Two numbers.
God damn it, I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it'd do any good.
I love that.
That sequence was so good. And it just didn't freaking stop. And I loved his update rather. And it wasn't like the last thing that was said or anything. I just had to end it there because it was too good.
Can we talk about the launch code for a second?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Same as the code on my luggage.
It explains so much. It has letters in it.
I understand.
There's expensive luggage.
That if it was 10 digits long and had, you know, both letters and numbers as options, completely random, and it's cycling through trying to get the code, that's going to take any computer a while to hard crack. That's millions of combinations, permutations.
Actually, it's septillions of combinations.
Thank you.
Yeah, but go on.
Yeah, many, many, many. But if it can get them out of order, then it should have taken like 36 seconds, if that.
The answer to your question, sir, is dramatic effect for the screen.
He knows that.
I know that, but it annoys me because I'm like, no, it only works if you have to get them in order and you have to get it all at once.
You have to get it all at once. You can't identify. You're not playing Mastermind with the code. You're not getting clues as to when you get they're not one right.
Well, you got that one right, but it's in the wrong spot.
Yeah, we're actually pulling combinations. You know, it's not a question whether or not you have the right numbers, whether or not you have the right number in relationship to the previous number, but you don't know the previous number, so then you have to check to see if you've had the right number in relation to the previous number that you don't yet have. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It just really annoyed the heck out of me. Three numbers.
Mastermind. That's another good 80s poll right there.
Four numbers.
But it made for compelling viewing. But yeah, yes, it was good. Realism was out.
And especially at the time period that this was aired, nobody knew it didn't work that way.
When I was a kid,
well, except for
when I was a kid, that was a whole, oh my God, but now I'm just looking at it, it's like, okay, it's scrolling through the things. It's got 0 through 9 and A through Z, 4. Got it. Okay.
Yep.
Why did it take that long to do that other than dramatic effect? It broke it for me. Instead of creating dramatic tension, it destroyed it because I'm just overthinking this shit. At it.
The only winning move.
Greetings, Professor Falcon.
Hello. Joshua?
Strange game. The only winning move is not to play. How about a nice game of chess?
And that was the last thing that really mattered in the movie, because then like 2 seconds later it went to credits.
Yep.
No post-credits scene, by the way. I was so disappointed.
In the 80s?
Being obtuse. I can't imagine what they would have been setting up for War Games 2.
There is a sequel. It didn't come out until 2008, but there is a sequel.
What?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I saw a blurb about it in here somewhere.
Oh, please tell me there's more. I suddenly want to know because I'm sure it's awful.
I'm rearranging the schedule right now.
2008, yeah. Let's see. War Games The Dead Code is the name of the sequel.
Dead Code.
Yes.
Okay. I have to look that up. Somehow I don't feel like I'm missing a lot.
The fact that it was made over a decade ago and you haven't heard about it probably says everything you need to know about it.
Fair enough. One more thing for you here. I see Rich over there cursing. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah. No, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm sorry. I just noticed that Matt Lautner is the main character in that movie.
In the lead sequel? Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
thumbs up, thumbs down. Rich, what do you got?
So my thumbs down. Honestly, my thumbs down all comes down to the professor's attitude at the end of the movie being the big thing that made it so stressful. Because the biggest obstacle at the end of this whole thing was the fact that the person they needed to make things happen just didn't care. That's kind of a little sticking point. But honestly, I really enjoyed the whole story and I like the whole thing and I like the pacing and I like the adventure of it. So that didn't hit that. On my thumbs up. Pushing the capabilities of the machine just past what they could do, well, quite a bit past in some ways, made for a story that helped shape the future of computers and war.
So the kind of the long-term societal impact.
It really, yeah. I mean, this was really a key point.
It's neat.
In several ways. As far as my overall, even with all the outdated tech and the evolution away from nuclear war, thankfully, the story still feels well-paced and action-filled. It is a great glimpse back into the past and how things were within a disaster story throw of, you know, putting us into this right. situation where the world could be ended because of hubris or anything else. I feel it holds up well, and it should be watched for that. And I am interested in hearing Vanessa's take on that and would love more detail. But I'm giving this 4.5 stars.
Nice. Well done, sir. Vanessa, what do you got?
I thought it was a well-told story. It had compelling hooks. And as long as it hit that suspension of disbelief that 2020 has given me.
Because
it's been a while.
Next, let's pick something that involves a worldwide disease. Let's do that.
Outbreak. No, let's not do that. Sounds like a terrible idea.
Good call.
But I thought it had good toning, good tensing. With the pieces that were supposed to be tense, I felt tense. I appreciated that. Music was well done. Camera work was well done. I thought it was a well done movie. The only thing that I found that I genuinely did not like was how MacGyver the main character was. That annoyed the ever loving crap out of me. I'm in a super secure door. I'm going to use these like medical tweezers to get out.
He was a suburban kid. Holy with crap. Money.
If he'd found some duct tape. My God.
I'm gonna hack a payphone with some random hunk of metal I found on the side of the street.
And he was way too smart for what he was doing.
And the truth is that, I mean, as weirdly obscure as that is, at the time, that was all kind of related field of knowledge. They were representing what they researched it at the time, pretty believably, I think, that a kid who had those kinds of hacker skills and learned those skills from other people in that same kind of world would pick up those skills. Now, whether or not that meant that they realistically would find themselves in this contrivance of a script where they were behind a door that they could use that skill to hack their way out of and then jam and things like that.
Not only that, but it's a secure door in a government facility.
Apparently, yeah, they weren't really that secure. Yeah.
My voice is my password. What was your total
overall rating? Four.
Okay.
I still enjoyed it, but that broke my suspension of disbelief.
I'm gratified that you enjoyed it because we knew this movie was way out of bounds for you. Not only being a much older movie than you, but in having such a reliance on things that were kind of cutting edge ideas at the time, you know,
they really were.
And the zeitgeist of the time, the, like I said, the Cold War era and the possibility of nuclear war was such a big thing when we were kids, mm-hmm. when the rest of us
were kids. Oh, the wall was already down by the time you were born.
Yeah. Which always weird to me. I was born in West Germany. It's always weird for me to say that because it was. But there's a lot
you were
that
born
I,
in doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot that I wondered about in terms of how it hit you. And so I'm really, really glad that you had a good time with it.
I enjoyed it.
I expected a lot more criticism. But again, I hadn't seen it in a long time. So
yeah.
Jason.
I shall fulfill your desire, sir.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you more than you know.
Okay, so this is one of those nostalgia killers for me. I watched this movie many times when I was younger. I thought Matthew Broderick was cool, and I thought the tech was fun, and it was, you know, there was a computer talking, and it was going to blow up the world, and the first thing they did was nuke Las Vegas, which should have been a sound clip, that whole, it's like, I do love the fact that you targeted Las Vegas first. Quite the biblical comeuppance, you know?
Yeah, that was good.
That you know, when they're like, are you even paying attention? Yeah. But I watched it many times, and I loved it. And then for whatever reason, I don't know why, one day I stopped. And then I never watched it again. And that was probably a good thing.
Until like last week.
Because until yesterday morning, I watched it again. And it started off very, very slow, and it was weird and creepy, and I didn't understand why we were in the cabin in the woods and not in War Games. And then we got down into the pit, and then we did the thing. Oh, okay, their missile didn't. He's not turning the key. This guy's going to get his blood splattered all over the wall. And then they play a military polka, and now we're at NORAD, and we've got the evil boss from 9 to 5 and Maurice from Northern Exposure arguing about computers in a room for way too long. And then the music changes again and we're now in Seattle and Matthew Broderick's in an arcade. And
14 and a half minutes before he comes on screen. 14 and a half minutes into the movie before the main character shows up on screen. Just kind of throw that out there.
And all of these things, and it just kept going. And things that... The abusive teacher and the weird section and the parents that let their kid have a keyed room. And it,
that was weird.
All of these things that just kept making me angry as a grown up.
I had friends who were suburban rich kids, and it's not out of the plausibility.
Oh, dude, that would have been.
I didn't
way
say
out
it wasn't out of I didn't say it wasn't possibility. I said it angered me. I understand that there are some people that are spoiled and what have you. You know, I would wager that Ferris Bueller had a locked door on his room. That wouldn't surprise me either. And guess what? If I watch Ferris Bueller again, I'm going to be mad at him too.
I don't
because
remember
I'm
seeing
on
it,
the wrong shift. I am on the wrong shift of the generations now. I'm now the 41-year-old really old guy that doesn't think the kid is on the right anymore. I'm on the wrong. Principal Rooney wasn't the bad guy.
Well, unfortunately, Jeffrey Jones was, and he's one of those Me Too guys we can't talk about. Oh. So there's that.
Well, at least not with the students.
Sorry.
I knew what you meant.
Anyway, but, you know, I have flipped, I have turned a page when it comes to a lot of those things. I am the get off my lawn guy now, instead of going, man, that old cranky guy is mean to the kids in this movie. And I'm like, man, those kids are horrible to that nice old guy. I've turned that page, and this movie helps me realize that. And it just so many things. Now, I did dig the message. The message was great. That futility is an answer. You know, sometimes you do need to stop. That is a valuable lesson to learn. The fact that some things should never be started. That is a valuable lesson to learn. And the fact that we have to have a balance in order to maintain a certain sense of security is a lesson that needs to be learned. Because if we get a whole bunch of really, really, really peace-promoting people in all of the positions of power and they say, turn off all of our bombs, guess what? There's nothing to stop everybody else from just killing. So I get the balance, and I learned a lot of that lesson that I learned came from this movie when I was young. So I appreciate those things. And like Vanessa said, when you're supposed to be tense, it was tense. And when it wasn't supposed to be tense, it wasn't tense. So the way they made the movie work was good. But there was just so many things that had me screaming at my screen. And that I just couldn't really enjoy the experience like I once did. If you're under 20, this is a great film. You should go out and make sure you watch it for the pre-nostalgia. If you're over 20, maybe not as much. I'm struggling to give it the 3 that I am just because I loved it so much when I'm younger, and I can't put it on the negative side, but it just barely ekes on to positive.
That's fair, though. That's really fair. I don't think you should feel bad about that. The truth is, no matter how critical you can be about it, you did enjoy the movie and had an impact on your childhood. Very simply, a reason that I'm willing to gloss a little higher on you there. Because you nailed some of the same issues. Yeah, I definitely feel some of what you're saying there. And you may be talking me down off the ledge a little bit. Kid, what you got?
Jason, we miss you in Neverland.
Oh, that hurt.
Oh, so true.
I struggle to give this movie thumbs down at all. I really do. I'd have to say there are two things that I'll go ahead and put on that list. One, the lack of security in NORAD was abominable.
That, despite the fact that they spent so much time emphasizing it with a door that was 8 feet thick.
Yes, yes. It was almost as thick as the door in the... anyways, I'm not going to go there. That's Tron.
And the guy that just casually walked out of it as it was shutting, like it was cinematic. No big.
Yeah, like if I'm a couple seconds off, it's not going to crush me to death. I'm just going to kind of cruise through here.
Even in our old apartment building, the access shaft to the elevator for the mechanics was always locked. The idea that it was not locked in NORAD is obscene. Gets a definite thumbs down. Also, apparently they did not understand this. There is only one reason to have a helicopter in your movie, and that is for it to crash. The fact that the helicopter did not crash in this movie gets it a thumbs down. Moving on.
That's a good point.
I love you, man.
And that's coming from someone who loves helicopters, by the way. I think they're the pinnacle of aviation technology. I want one. My wife refuses to let me buy one, but one day I'm going to have a helicopter.
Build one. Well, considering the fact you think the only reason for it to exist is for it to crash.
In movies. In real life, they are very safe. But in movies, they're only there to crash.
Build one. You can buy a kit. You can buy a kit.
Yeah, it's only... I found one for $22,000, slightly refurbished. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, my thumbs up, and there's a lot of them, but for the purposes of brevity, I'm going to just say one. That's Jennifer. She was absolutely one of the high points of this movie. She was completely unreal. She is a fantasy construct from beginning to end. There were no girls in 1983 in any school like her. Ask any nerd, we'll tell you.
I love what is the appropriate response to your parents aren't home? No, my room's up here. Well, obviously we've been hanging out a lot, so.
She's completely fictitious, but she is one of my favorite things in the movie. Her attitude, what's the word I'm looking for? Just jump in and go with whatever. It was amazing. She was great. Right. I totally wish I'd known someone like that. But enthusiasm. Like I said, they don't exist.
Had the budget to buy plane tickets at a moment's notice.
Right. Yeah.
On the other hand.
In the 80s, yeah.
If she talked to him at all, it meant her parents probably also came for money.
Yeah.
Well, which she bought a plane ticket for him.
On a moment's notice.
And one for her. Well, no, she drove. It was only 3 hours.
She drove 3 hours.
From Seattle, yeah.
Right. And, I have to throw this in there. The fact that one of the places they nuked was their own city.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant.
I loved it.
I had never caught that previous to this viewing,
I didn't
by the
either.
Way.
Oh, I did.
I didn't either.
I did. If I played a game like that, the first place on the list would have been Wichita.
Wichita. Because of the... strategic value of our site. That's it, right?
This goes back. I got to back up on my thumbs down list. I've got to put this back on my thumbs down list because there is no way that it should not have been a huge red flag that this was not happening, that the two places the Soviets decided to nuke were civilian targets with no military value whatsoever. Las Vegas and Seattle. I mean, come on.
Cultural centers. Obviously, we know the Soviets hate our art.
Should have definitely been a clue to them that something was not on the level there. Anyways, so my final rating, overall 4 stars. I would have given it 4.5 before I rewatched it, but it doesn't. No, you know what? 4.5. I'm just going 4.5. We're done.
That's funny. I'm falling the other direction, actually. It's interesting, too, because you harped on Jennifer as the thumbs up, and if I had a thumbs down, she'd be one of the things on the list.
Really?
She was such an unrealistic and vanilla character to me. It's like, I was like, come on, this was Ally Sheedy? I totally forgot. You know, every other character I've ever seen her play, I haven't forgotten. You know, there's something to be said for that. I don't think it was her. I think it was the writing.
We agreed on the unrealistic part.
Yeah, exactly. It was the same reason. Yeah. So there you go.
Unrealistic. My
problem for me,
problem
not a problem for you.
Her... Just real quick, sorry, is this because you changed my grade?
Yeah. Yeah. She hadn't been watching the news, right. Obviously, right?
She watched the news. She called him and said, are you watching the news? Was that us? She knew. She understood. If they'd cut that scene out, I would have bought hook, line, and sinker, is this because you changed my grade?
Right.
But she knew they effed with the nuclear system.
I'm 4 stars, Rich, for me.
Awesome.
I enjoyed the movie a great deal. It has a lot of character, but after watching it again, I realized I don't feel a powerful need to ever really watch it again. And I think I actually watched this a couple years ago, and it was still forgot about all that stuff because there was a period I think I mentioned this on, maybe it was Metagamers recently, but there's a period during which I spent time when my daughter and I had a lot of time to spend together, like late at night, because of work schedules and stuff, where I spent time trying to work on her geek cred. And that was one of the things we did was movies, because she's one of these people. She could play a video game and 27 years later, remember every detailed turn, twist and turn you got to make in this video game to get to the end. The kid can do that too. But
only with some games.
But she can't remember a movie she watched 2 weeks ago. She never does. She details of movies just don't stick with her. And she loves movies, so that makes no sense to me.
It works.
But it's great. My mom
loves humor, but she can't remember a joke. It's great. I can tell her the same joke every
week. Exactly.
Movie.
We can watch the same movies again and again. And she'll remember things that she watched in the movie and a little bit come back to her. But if it's been a while, especially, it's nothing. But I went through a period where I was introducing her to movies that I felt like any general, you know, geek or daughter of a geek should have in their repertoire. And so she saw War Games a couple years ago. I doubt she remembers watching it, but that's narrow. That's another person. So 4 stars for me. Where does that put us, sir?
That actually puts us at a straight average of 4 stars, which is interestingly enough, speaking of the nostalgia train, the same thing we gave Red and the same thing we gave Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures and Boondock Saints and Willow.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of nostalgia there. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, guys. That was a really great rundown on that movie, I think. Was there anything else we missed there? I think we're good. I'm good. You good? I'm good. Pretty all right. So what do we got coming up next week, Vanessa? What's on our schedule?
Sky High.
Sky High.
Five stars.
On Disney Plus. No, we can skip that one, guys. 5 stars.
I thought we were doing War Games too.
Oh, dude, let's not.
No.
I'm looking forward to Sky High. I haven't watched that in a few years. That's a fun movie. It's a really fun movie. I think it's
I've
got
actually
some,
seen that one.
I think
before.
It's got some problems too. So it'd be fun.
Have we all seen this one?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I've seen. I don't remember Kid? It, but I've seen.
Oh,
it.
I love this movie.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right.
I will say the one thing that I remember specifically is it's got the best character name in all of moviedom ever.
Which one's that? Oh, War and Peace. I knew it. It also has some of the kids in the hall in it, which is
well, that's
badass.
School. Of course, there are kids in the hall.
Yeah, badass. Good stuff. Funny. I'm looking forward to it. So that's next week. Make sure you watch that. If you are watching us on Twitch, catch us every Saturday afternoon, except for this week, obviously. When occasionally
Sorry.
we may have some schedule, some screwy schedule stuff coming up because we have about 40% of our show works in the tax industry and tax season starts in mid-January. So they're going to mess with our schedules. I get that.
60.
We'll figure it out. We'll try to let y'all know. But if you can, hang out with us live. Was anybody on the stream today? We didn't really promote.
Yeah.
A couple of friends showed up.
We didn't really promote. So want to say hi to the people that were here. And God, I cannot get to my Twitch screen. What the hell? Where the heck is my mouse?
Yuriksha.
Go ahead and pull it up here. Becky and who?
Yuriksha is the chat name. I think I've heard what their name is before, but I don't know.
Yuriksha.
Yeah, it's Tad.
Is that Tad?
Okay, Tad, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I want to see it. Okay.
And I do have tweets to follow, so if the Twitchy people hang out after the cut.
So thank you, guys. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. I know we don't get to talk to you much doing this show because we're trying to kind of power through things in a timely fashion, and we eat up a lot of time, as you can see.
We try. We don't want to edit much.
We don't want to edit much. I appreciate that. I appreciate that more than you guys could possibly comprehend. I appreciate it so much. So, be sure to join us next time. For Rich and for Vanessa, for Jason and the kid, everybody have a fantastic week. We'll see you next time with Sky High here on Exposition Street.